experts, the socializing, and all the fun tonight. It's a great pleasure for me to introduce our next speaker, who's the Vice President and CTO of Capgemini for the Continental Europe and Asia Pacific. Also, he's a governing board member of the Open Group, a globally operating standardization consortium, and an active contributor to the Open Dark Society. Based in the Netherlands, he frequently features in various IT magazines, conferences, and blogs. Ron Toledo is a renowned advocate of open, but is also, as you will soon discover, an avid admirer of the Bill and Linda Gates Foundation. Ron, the stage is yours. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I must say it's always a pleasure to be in Norway. I'm here every now and then because Norway is part of continental Europe, believe it or not. In our view, Norway is part of continental Europe. And I'm from the Netherlands, from Holland. So, especially if I'm in Norway, I always have to refrain from making remarks about Norway as a speed skating nation, which you're not really nowadays, are you? I would never say that, of course. You're much better in skiing, who cares? But anyway, speed skating, no, of course, you're still doing quite well in speed skating, within Norway, that is. But of course, I wouldn't make any jokes about that at all. And it's always a pleasure to be in Norway because exciting things tend to happen over here in December. I was here for the Nobel Prize Peace Concert. I guess you all saw it on TV or something, probably. They probably broadcasted it live on Norway One, I guess, or something like that. And I liked the Nobel Prize Peace Concert we had. I saw the Al Gore and the Crown Prince. He was actually dancing on Earth, Wind & Fire. You saw that? He's going to be your king one day, so it's very interesting. And the thing is, and then I learned a lot about Norway because I was at the Grand Hotel over here, just standing outside, and I was with some other Norwegian guys. And then suddenly they all were completely in they were all rumor. Oh my God, there's a celebrity. He's there. And I thought, who's there? What's happening over here? Is it Al Gore? Is it the Crown Prince? Who's outside there? But it actually was Kurt Nielsen. So he was, you know him. He's your famous Norwegian rock singer, Kurt Nielsen. And he was standing outside, and they all wanted his autograph. So if Al Gore had been there, they would have ignored him completely. But Kurt Nielsen was there, and actually, that's some of my recent memories of Norway. And it's always a pleasure to be here. As a CTO, Chief Technology Officer of Capgemini, I hope you know, is a consulting IT and outsourcing company. We're worldwide. We're something like 85,000, although in Norway, not that big. In many other countries we are, including in France. This is actually a company that was created in France, which is interesting for open source. It's interesting for open source, as you'll see a little bit later. And as I work across the world, there's always a country, there's always some place, there's always a company that is further ahead than others. And you see them successful in applying, in this case, open source and open standards and benefiting from open in general. And I just felt that at the end of the day, when you've heard a lot about all the benefits of open, I would try to find some additional angles, some additional viewpoints that help you to think in different ways about the effects of open source. And yes, I do like the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as well. I think from my perspective, I think we're trying to find solutions for our clients. And after all, we're doing this in the end for clients, right, that do something useful with our software. So I'm just trying to find the best solutions for them. And more, they are open solutions. But it doesn't mean that it's the only alternative to them. Personally, I'm not agnostic. I'm quite agnostic, so I'm not into any specific religion. So I feel every now and then in the open source community, we have this, you know, politically correct flavor in terms of, you know, if it's from the open source community, then it's correct, then it's ecological, then it's green, then it's all okay, right? There are some Bolivian farmers working on the open source software, right? And we're all sharing the things. And I think every now and then we should take a little bit distance from that and be a little bit more relative towards it. So every now and then, of course, I wouldn't do it right now, but every now and then when I'm addressing an open source conference, I just cannot help but showing some of the things that the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation have been doing so far. So every now and then, if an open source advocate would tell me, you know, with open source we're changing the world and we're battling the evil empire and we're having yellow tapes with Windows-free zone and these sort of things, right? Which, of course, we don't have here today. But if we would have had it, then I would have shown you a slide like this and just tell a little bit about the hundreds and thousands of children that already have been saved by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, because they're spending all of their evil empire money into battling diseases, including vaccinations against TBC and malaria. Just that we know at the end of the day, right, it's all about... Open is no longer something about battling the others or taking a different standpoint. It's much more about the many benefits it has to our clients. And that's really the reason why I'm so enthusiastic about it. Now, to be quite honest, it's 2008, right? And we already have been holding conferences about open source many times. And I think it's safe to say in 2008 that we can conclude that open source is essentially everywhere. Particularly if you ask Gartner, they will confirm that. Well, with an 80% probability, that is. But they will confirm, you know, that this is just a quick overview of all of the publications that Gartner were doing around open source. And essentially, if you can see, open source is in everything. And I will dedicate a few lines to it later on, because I do think that open source is going new waves. And we're exploring new ways for open source solutions, and they are not exactly like the ways that we have been exploring in the past few years. So there's definitely a change coming up. And on the other hand, I think we can safely state, and this is certainly what I tell our clients, we can safely state that open source has now arrived and actually has been accepted in quite a broad way. So there's no need in terms of evangelizing any longer around it. And one of the things I really would like to share with you, just a few words on that, is I believe there's so many different solutions. You saw them just now, and we find that many organizations, including, of course, the government, are sometimes confused by all the possibilities there are. And they simply ask themselves, all of these different technologies, how can they help to address all of the business issues that we have? And as I said, in the long run, despite the fact that we're all having fun with open source, in the long run, we're doing this because we hope that some people are benefiting from it, right? In business situations. We hope that it helps. So with Capgemini, we created something which we call the TechnoVision. We do it every few years. It's a worldwide exercise that we do. We talk a lot with our technology partners. We talk a lot among ourselves and with our big clients. And then we create a vision on where technology is going and the way that it will impact the business of our clients. And one of the pictures in that I felt was particularly useful if we want to explore a little bit more where open source currently is going. I believe it's all about freedom. And I like this picture, which is, by the way, a Microsoft license picture for the Microsoft PopFly product, just as a, you know, sidestep. It's a new mashup tool. But I like the picture because it's a picture that sort of identifies with freedom. I believe that technology can bring freedom and that open source can bring freedom to many of the organizations that we're dealing with. And there's freedom and there's two sides to freedom. First of all, of course, there's the freedom to innovate and to grow and to grasp new opportunities wherever we see them. It's an exciting new world, right? And we can use technology to create new businesses and have new products and new markets. So we want to be able to be free to select and choose whatever we want to go. And on the other hand, I think, and probably many of you will recognize this, in many cases we feel that the IT department is no longer able to move. So it's frustrating, because we see the new world of exciting, innovative technologies, and on the other hand, we have our existing IT departments, and we cannot move any longer. So we have to liberate ourselves first, we have to get our act together first, on all of our baseline infrastructure and all of our baseline applications before we can step into this new free world of innovative technology. It's a sort of a paradox, right? And many CIOs face this paradox nowadays. We want to move further, we must innovate because our clients are demanding that they want to innovate, and on the other hand, they can't move because they have all their inflexible existing IT, which is very heterogeneous and very difficult to integrate. And it's really something that impedes them from moving further. And they are sort of petrified. They're unable to move any further. And I believe that open source can address both sides. I believe that the open source that we know, at least that most of us know right now, is particularly a set of technologies that can help us to free ourselves. we can liberate ourselves as organizations, as individuals, so that we have the ability to grow further and innovate in new directions. And as we will see, these new directions, there's other open source software underneath, and there's other open source concepts underneath. They are largely different from the type of open source that we know right now. So let me try to explain this. You may have seen our booth over here on the market. We had this impressive A0 poster like this. I guess you can all read it, right? If you can't read it, you have a problem with your eyes. So believe me, the others can read it. So it's your fault. But actually, what we have on this poster is just a collection of most of the major free software solutions we have available nowadays in the world. And we have categorized them and put them in all sorts of different layers. And what you find is underneath, and have a look at the booth if you like, but underneath you see all of the infrastructural type of software. So operating systems, databases, integration middleware, security stuff. I mean, all of the, I guess you can safely say the area where it all started. And on top of that, we see some new areas quickly emerge. And I think that a lot of the exciting new open source projects are currently over there. They're sort of in the middle over there. They're in the blue, the dark blue section, in an orange section, but also at the right. At the right, we find all sorts of business applications. So here we're talking about ERP. Customer relationship management software, general ledger, all of the other business type of applications that we now quickly see emerge. And it's a whole new different style of applications. It's a new breed of users that we're dealing with. And also, we're seeing a lot of software in the business process management space. So all sorts of open source solutions that help us to create flexible processes and then manage these processes and run these processes, and I mean business processes. So this is an entirely new area as well. And the third, I think, exciting area where we see a lot of growth now is in business intelligence. So all sorts of tools to get data from all sorts of different sources, then combine them, integrate them, and present them in all sorts of graphics. That's also an area where I see a lot of organizations now turning to when we're talking about new ways for open source. So the interesting thing is, it's an area that is relatively new, I would argue, to the open source community, although there's already a lot of solutions available, but they're still growing. And we need to understand that it's a different area. And one of the things that I think is particularly different is that we're dealing with, business clients. So they're different people than the users of Linux or a database system or an enterprise service bus. These are different people. You actually have to talk to them and communicate with them. And that might be a really different approach that we're seeing. But this is the area where I expect a lot of growth in the forthcoming years. And it will pose some new challenges. Actually, it fits in this picture that I just skipped. But actually, it fits in this exact picture in which you say, solutions, you can find them in different areas. There are solutions on the bottom. And they are really about freeing yourself as an organization or an individual. So you're using solutions to create what you could call an invisible infrastructure, or as we call it over here, an invisible infrastructure, because of all of the data stuff is inside there as well. And obviously, we can use a lot of open source solutions to achieve that. And they are standardized, they are open, they are easy to manage. They actually create the open standards that go with them. So clearly, this is a tool to liberate ourselves as organizations from heterogeneous, difficult to manage systems. And I think in the forthcoming years, we also will see that business services, and for some unknown reasons, we're calling this sector as a service, doesn't matter, what we're really referring to are business applications. So all sorts of business applications in the near future also will be rationalized and simplified and standardized, because we want to liberate ourselves from having to manage them ourselves. We want to liberate ourselves from having to custom build themselves over and over again. We want to create the power of collective wisdom in the open source community to liberate ourselves and be more free. And once we've done that, I believe that it's time for the upper half of this architectural framework. And there you will find a new breed of applications. They pertain to flexible processes. They pertain to what we call thriving on data, so business intelligence, if you like, real-time integrated business intelligence. And on top of that, even in the years to come, we will see much more collaborative type of applications. So these will be applications that we use to reach out to the outside world, connect our information to the outside world, and create whole new ways of working together, whole new ways of mass collaboration. I'll show you a little bit about that as well. So that's sort of a framework underneath. Now, I believe that a lot of companies nowadays are able to support this, as was already stated in many different presentations. If open source is to become mainstream, then probably mainstream companies need to support it as well. So one of these, obviously, is our own company as well. We're having a particular site, which is osspartner.com, which features a lot of also free open source support. One of the tools I would particularly like to point out to you, and it was already mentioned in one of the parallel presentations earlier this afternoon, particularly for the new open source components. So maybe it's not Linux, right? We don't really need to prove that Linux is mature. We probably don't need to prove that MySQL is mature, or Apache. But if we're talking about this new space of business process management software, for example, or we're talking about business intelligence, Pentaho-style type of applications, or we're talking about ERP, business applications, then it's still a question on the market in terms of how mature is this really? Can we actually compare this to the commercial, closed type of alternatives? And are there objective measures to assess whether these solutions are actually mature enough to be used in a business context? And I think nowadays on the market you'll find different frameworks. I think there's a Norwegian framework as well, which is available, which is some, I think it's called business readiness or business readiness assessment, something like that. I learned from it today. Also on OSS Partner you will find an interesting framework, which by the way, of course, is open source. And it measures open source components on four areas, asking a lot of questions. So it's really sort of a questionnaire that you have to fill in, and it gives a very good objective assessment of how mature a software component actually is in open source. So it doesn't only say something about the software that is available, but also about the support that is available, the number of trainings that are available, how active the user community is, but also how active the developers community is. All of these things, of course, say a lot about the maturity of a specific open source component. And I now certainly would like to recommend to you, because we are living in a time in which we need to prove over and over again that it's an alternative, that there are actually serious solutions that we can use in mission-critical business context. And I think objective frameworks like this, and it's an open framework, so you can add to it if you like, you can use it for your own purposes, you can enrich it, and please give it back, of course, so that others benefit from it as well. I think you will find this is a very excellent tool that we need in a true business context. Now, a little bit enough about open source. As I said, I like open in general, and open source is really one aspect of a world that is quickly becoming more open. I think the key to being more successful is our success in collaboration, in our ability to reach out to the outside world and work together with others. And if we do it better than others, then we can be more competitive, or we can be more successful. And I think this is all being carried by the availability of open standards in general. So open source is a very clear driver to open standards becoming more popular. And I think we all agree that open standards always have been important, right, for success. I guess you all know this picture. We tend to know it in this. No, you don't. It's the Tower of Babel. The Tower of Babel in Babylon, you know, the famous Tower of Babel. People started to work on it. You know about Babylon, of course. It was founded by Nimrod. And Nimrod was one of the descendants of Noah. And of course, you know Noah's Ark, right? He had to build this ark with all the animals. They had global warming at that time as well. So, you know, they had a threat of flooding. So he had to build the ship with all of the animals on it. So, and he shipped them. Actually, he was one of the very first logistics experts in the world, Noah. And then he had Nimrod, of course, which was one of his offspring. And he was a smart guy that actually created the city of Babylon. And the city of Babylon, the people in Babylon were famous because they were able to collaborate like no one else. They were really able to collaborate, and they could create anything they wanted. And the thing is, they all spoke the same language. And not only language in terms of, you know, plain speaking language, but also in terms of semantics and culture. That's, of course, the metaphor behind it. So they all spoke the same language, and this is why they could collaborate so well. And this is why they were able to create magnificent, you know, buildings like the Tower of Babel. And you know why they created the Tower of Babel? Because they heard all the nice things about heaven, so they wanted to see if it was really true. So they were building this tower, and if it would be high enough, they thought, then they could reach into the heaven, and then they could see if it was really true about God and these sort of things. And then the story, of course, goes that God wasn't really amused by this. And we thought, well, you know, that it didn't really fit into the divine master plan. So he decided to intervene. And then from one night to the other, suddenly everybody spoke a different language. That's the story. And I think this is quite relevant in our open area as well. Because you know what happened to the Tower of Babel. Then suddenly nobody was able to collaborate any longer. And the tower came down and the people of Babel were spread across the globe. And even now today, the story goes, we're not able to work together efficiently simply because we don't speak the same language. Now, I think speaking the same language in many different aspects is the key to successful collaboration. And I think open standards and also open source play a very dominant and important role in achieving this once more. By the way, just this summer, I was in Istanbul talking to 100 Indian CIOs. They once a year they gather in a nice city, the 100 CIOs of the biggest Indian companies. And I was also talking to them about the Tower of Babel. So I told to them, well, of course you all know the Tower of Babel, right? You know, 100 Hindu people. Like, yeah, right, Tower of Babel. So talking about different languages, right? And they appear to have, in Hindu religion, they have a similar metaphor, by the way, for the inability to communicate. And by the way, India itself is a metaphor because they have 2,000 languages in the country. But anyway, that was a good proof of the problems you have when you don't speak the same language. Now, I think this is the other one that you need to remember. At the end of the session, we will do a quick questionnaire. So, and only if you have it right, you're allowed to go to the opera tonight and have dinner, and have drinks, by the way. So don't worry, it's multiple choice, so it's easy to answer. But there's a lot of standards, of course, and if we think about standards and the way the open source community is driving standards forward, one of the first things, of course, are the, you know, what you could call horizontal standards. And I think we're quite safe on that nowadays. I think we're still battling, of course, a lot about what horizontal standards, about data exchange and security and integration, all of the other things we see over here, what standards really will be the final standard. But I think, compared to a few years ago, we are much further. We're much further than we used to be. And I think we can also safely assume, and we see this in many cases, that open source projects are actually driving these standards forward. And we can also safely assume that in many cases, if we choose an open source solution, we have a better chance that it integrates with identified open standards than closed solutions, although this doesn't necessarily need to be the case. So horizontal standards are important. I think in the forthcoming years, much more important will be vertical standards. So here we're talking about industry-specific semantic standards. Here we're talking about what language are we really talking in a specific market, in a specific industry. But by the way, when I was addressing these Indian CIOs this summer, this was the second slide I used. It's true. It actually happened. It's really true. So first I had the Babel slide, and then I had this one. It's one of my best presentations ever, really. It was, the connection with the room was almost perfect. So the only thing I could do was, you know, play the ignorant bastard from the West, right, which I, of course, was. So they all saw it, and then everything was okay. But I just showed this slide as one example of an industry in which they're already very successful in creating open standards to exchange information between all of the players in the industry. This is the meat and poultry industry, right? So all the way from the cow in her green fields to her final destination in the store, you can imagine that a lot of players are involved. And nowadays, all of them are actually exchanging the same information, the same open semantics. It's based in this case on meat and poultry, XML. It's all the XML you need to exchange information about meat and poultry. Now, I guess you all want that, right? But it's a very useful standard in that particular market. And we will see many more markets, of course, including the government, in which we'll have to introduce these semantic open standards. And this really is a challenge, I think, in the forthcoming years. Again, it's an example of the shift that we're seeing in open source emphasis. We have been battling a lot in the infrastructural area, and we have the horizontal standards now, and I think we're all quite safe on their robustness. And now, in the forthcoming years, we have to grow our business-related standards much more. I'll have to check my time because the chairman just said, well, you know, if you're even half a minute late, we'll simply drag you off the podium, so I don't want to take that risk. Actually, as I said, sometimes we see governments operating that are already really active on enforcing open standards and open source because they believe it's beneficial to the business of, in this case, their government. A good example is France. As I said, Capgemini originally is a French company, although typically outside France we don't really listen to them, by the way, but that doesn't matter. It is originally a French company, and we are very big in France, and they have really been involved in this open source revolution that we're seeing in France. Because within the government in France, I think we have a best practice in terms of applying open source solutions throughout the life cycle, and they are completely comfortable with using open source solutions within the government, also on the desktop, also for business applications. Now, the reason for that it has been debated a lot. You can imagine that the French, they don't really try to be too much dependent on evil US. So they feel that by adopting open source solutions, probably they're more independent from what the evil US is doing. But anyway, it's definitely a grounding area. It's definitely one of the pilot areas where we already see open source applied in so many different ways. Another one, I live in the Netherlands, and another one that I was discussing with some people earlier today is the action plan that has been successfully approved in the Dutch government. It's called Netherlands Opening Connection. It's an action plan that actually says two different things. First of all, there's a whole set of open standards. And these open standards, we need to comply to it. It's called comply or explain. So there's a whole set of interoperability standards, and you need to comply to them by 2009. Otherwise, you're in serious problems. And secondly, they have a very active support activity towards open source. So when an open source solution is equal to a closed solution, you have to choose for the open source solution. And also, within all the departments, within all the ministries, you have to have an applied strategy to assess open source, assess its maturity, and also, again, you have to explain why you haven't chosen for a specific open source solution. I like that, and I do think that in more countries, we will see it in the forthcoming years. And as you are all aware, there are multiple drivers. I don't need to go through that again. I think we've heard enough about that today, but also in previous open source conferences. There's so many advantages in terms of flexibility, but also cost and the freedom to go where you want, that clearly the government can be leading over here. And if I'm not mistaken, then the Norwegian government will make some similar steps, or is already making some similar steps as well. One thing, of course, one of these standards is, by the way, OpenDoc, which is, I think, a lightweight, very nice standard. And then there's also another standard, which is OOXML. And of course, no well-thinking country in the world would actually think of approving that standard, would it? No, of course not. I mean, it's... No, of course not in Norway, right? I don't know what happened over here. I think you had your ISO standardization committee?
No, it was Mugabe's
corpse that came to the... Mugabe, yeah. There were 19 people in the room, right? And two were for OOXML. And then 17 were against, so they voted for. Yeah, Mugabe was in the room, the Norwegian Mugabe. I don't know, I'm not sure what happened over there. It's 8,000 pages standard. I must be honest, that is including all the bugs, so that explains to a certain extent why it is. But I mean, standards are supposed to be, you know, simplifying life. I still think that standards mean not too much standards, first of all. And secondly, I think they need to be simple and open and approachable. So let's hope that it turns out that way. One last thing I would like to say about the government is one of the best practices I've seen so far around the world is in Canada. I'm quite active in the Open Group, which is a standardization consortium for methodologies and some other things. And the Canadian government is actually quite active in this Open Group. And one of the things they've done is what they call their Business Transformation Enablement Program. They're sort of like Norway or the Netherlands, right? If somebody hierarchically up there says something, then of course we won't do it, right? But that's at least what we do in the Netherlands. Probably it's the same in Norway. No respect, of course, for anybody over there. And it's the same in Canada, or even worse, because they're very federated. So how do you get collaboration and open standards and the will to work together in a completely federated country in which they don't really want to work together because, they even speak different languages over there. So how do you do it? And I like the Canadian government. They took this open source like approach, so they choose transparency, and they created reference models and a lot of guidelines, and they created standards. But they all published it in an open style, and they solicited everybody who's working with it to pick it up, enrich it, and give it back. So to create a live community of people actually involved in transformation within the Canadian government. And it's now seen as one of the best examples of how you can get something in the open source style going in terms of change without having this top-down approach by forcing everybody to do it. And I guess we all agree that it's typical to the open source style as well. So Canada, you don't need to emigrate all of you to Canada to have a look at it, but it's certainly, and you can find it if you Google for BTEP and Canada, you'll find immediately all of the documents that you need, and you can go through them and have a look at what it actually means to have an open style of change at a governmental level. It's open source style change, I think. A few other remarks about open methodologies. As I said, I'm also active in the open group. And nowadays, I feel that it's not only a matter of open source or open standards any longer. It's also a matter of open methodologies. We all need to work in the same way, otherwise we're not able to collaborate. We still might be able to exchange information in a similar way. But more and more, we also need to work together in a similar way. And the open group is particularly focusing on open, published methodologies. So but particularly TOGAF, I think, is quite well known in Norway as well. The Open Group Architectural Framework. It's an open framework. It's an open methodology for architecture, so that people across the world will speak the same language when they're creating architectures and discussing with each other. And certainly, I think this is also a key factor in becoming more collaborative and becoming more successful in working together. The last thing I want to say about methodologies is, of course, as I said, it's a federated world. It's a distributed world. Nowadays, we are involved in projects across the world. Nowadays, we have to work with our colleagues in India because they have the specializations, they have the expertise. It's happening all over the world. And so it means that working together, and it really resembles, of course, what we saw in open source. Working together means that you have some onshore locations, some nearshore locations. This is from the perspective of the Netherlands, by the way. Norway, of course, the same. And then you would have some typical remote offshore locations, and you would have your team spread across the world, and they all need to work together. And obviously, they will be using the internet. That does sound a ring a bell if we compare it to open source style of development. But also, I think, in terms of the way of working and the tools that we're using, and also the architectural foundation underneath, is clearly something that resembles the things that we already learned in open source for years now. By the way, when I showed this map of the world to my colleagues in the US, they couldn't really appreciate it, but obviously it's a bigger world, right? There's more than this. So it's really a cathedral versus bazaar style. We all know the book of Eric Raymond, right? Cathedral versus the bazaar. If we want to work together on a global scale, and we have clearly a distributed team, we need a distributed way of working, which is much more in the bazaar style of developments that we learned in open source, rather than this top-down hierarchical style of we designed it over here and you just build it over there and bring it back when it's ready. I think we've learned from open source in many years that it doesn't work like that if you have distributed teams. So I think in distributed development, whether open source or not, we need to learn from what we've learned in open source in terms of how you really successfully collaborate on a global scale using the internet to unify all of them and having a shared way of working. Well, that's about what I wanted to tell to you. There's a last thing about innovation. I think that once we've done all of these things in infrastructure, and once we have implemented all these nice things in processes and business intelligence and business applications, I think there's a whole new world of innovation. And I think that one of the things that we clearly learned from open source in the past few years is that open innovation is much more successful than closed innovation. If we bring our assets to the outside world, if we give to the outside world, we get things back. And it's really a meritocracy, right? What we give, we get back, and maybe even more than that. Sun once launched this idea of what they called innovation happens elsewhere, the IHE company. It means that if you want to innovate things, and it could be software, and of course we've seen it in open source, but also products and services and even standards, why not give it to the outside world, support it through a platform, and make it flourish, make sure that it works, and then you get something back. I'll make this to an end, Chairman, within a minute or so don't worry, I'm always ready. As I said, the open source style of development just doesn't pertain to software alone any longer. And I'm quite sure that many of you are familiar with all of the examples, but I couldn't resist showing you a few to end this presentation. We have, of course, the open source footwear. So if you have a brilliant idea about what a shoe should look like and how it should be built, you can share it with the community, and of course they will give better designs back. And this, of course, which is particularly relevant in Norway, we have the open source beer, which is certainly also something. You know, you have a beer recipe. If you can improve it and give it back to the community. If you just want to use it to brew your own beer, go ahead. Make your own branding on top of it. It's the, you know, open source style of development, but for products and services. And I think we have a lot of inspiration to bring to the world. And it's so much more than just some nice infrastructural software solutions. There's so many more things to benefit from in the open thinking. And so I hope I have gave you some additional perspective. There was one speech about the $1 laptop per child PC. And it's also completely running on open source. You all heard probably about the PC. And you know, the funny thing is, if you think about Bill and Melinda Gates, they're actually curing the kids in all of these nations, and then open source is actually helping them, helping to teach them. So I think this is a nice combination, isn't it? That's a nice thing to conclude this presentation with. Well, I hope I gave you some additional perspectives again. Tonight, there's a party for all of you. There will be alcohol, and I know it's a favorite subject in Norway. One of your the Norwegian colleagues just recently said to me, you know, we have a Norwegian saying, yes, you can have fun without alcohol, but why take the chance? So that's something I definitely want to give to you. Tonight there's opera, and just to make sure, the organization asked to me this, opera is not a browser, it's something with music. So you enjoy yourself tonight. Thank you very much. Bye.
Well, Ron, thank you for sharing your insights. Thank you for testing our eyesight and for being so honest on your cultural sensitivity. So please,
like a true Dutchman.
Yeah, like a true Dutchman. Please, a token of appreciation from us. Kjære alle sammen, det har vært en lang dag. Vi har holdt på i mange timer, men det ikke over. Og det kanskje nå moro å begynne. Det som skal skje nå det kommet noen herrer her fra et herværende tidsskrift, som skal arrangere en debatt om hvor åpen OOXML er. La oss håpe at det blir en åpen debatt og ikke en lukket avdeling. Ja. Når de er ferdige, disse rigger, vi starter om 3-4 minutter. Når de er ferdige, så er det altså klokka 5:30, så begynner den sesjon som heter Meet the Experts. Og hvis jeg kan tillate meg en siste blødme i dag, så er det at da går vi på en måte fra free software til free soft drinks. Og forestillingen her i kveld begynner altså klokka 8. Morgen tidlig så er det oppstart klokka 9. Og siden vi vet hvor alle dere bor, så regner vi at alle er presis. Så da venter vi bare på debatten som begynner hvert øyeblikk, og da takker jeg for meg.
Takket være fantastiske folk som hjelper til her. Vi skal snakke litt om Microsoft og åpen kildekode. For en uke siden så skjedde det at dokumentformatet som brukes i Office-programvaren ble godkjent som en ISO-standard. Det har vakt en del reaksjoner. Det vet dere masse om, tror jeg. Det ikke helt uten debatt at dette har skjedd, for å si det forsiktig. Vi skal ikke snakke bare om det her, men vi skal gi disse debattdeltakerne anledning til å si litt om hvordan de oppfatter Microsoft som aktør i forhold til åpne standarder og åpen kildekode. Jeg har med meg Håkon Jumli fra Opera Software, teknologidirektør. til venstre her. Og så har vi Halvor
Valla
fra Software Innovation.
Ja, direktør for Software, Software Innovation.
Og så har vi Svein-Erik Viltil fra Kommunes Sentralforbund. Din rolle der.
Underdirektør.
Så har vi Shahzad Rana, innleid våpendrager fra Microsoft via QuestPoint, eller omvendt. Velkjent folk dette her, så vi bare setter I gang. Jeg skal åpne for innlegg fra salen. Jeg sier fra når jeg vil ha spørsmål fra salen, og jeg håper at dere kan tenke litt på lure ting og spørre disse opplyste menneskene. Ok, vi setter I gang. Jeg spør først Software Innovation. Hva betyr det for dere som utvikler programvare for kunder I Norge at Microsofts dokumentformat har blitt ISO-standard?
I utgangspunktet så vi opptatt av åpne standarder og benytte åpne standarder. Vi jobber med OpenXML og vi jobber med ODF. Og det bra at våre kunder kan bruke OpenXML. Det en standard vi har god integrasjon for I våre produkter. Vi har veldig god erfaring med å lage gode løsninger basert på den standarden. Vi tror det blir bra for norske brukere av programvare at vi kan velge den standarden, fordi det en god standard.
Mm. Viltil, hva bør en åpen standard innebære, og hvilken betydning har det for dere, som jo store kunder I offentlig sektor, at leverandørene kan tilby produkter som basert på åpne standarder?
Ja, jeg tror det betyr veldig mye for kommunesektoren at man tilbyr produkter basert på åpne standarder. Det jo dette som jeg også berørte I innlegget mitt tidligere I dag, dette med integrasjon som en helt avgjørende sak I offentlig sektor og ikke minst I kommunesektoren hvor man har kanskje 80-100 ulike systemer I kommune. Mange av disse skal I dag snakke sammen. Det trengte de kanskje ikke for 20 år siden, men I dag så må de det, og da må vi ha integrasjon, vi må ha systemer som snakker sammen, og da åpne standarder essensielt.
Kan de snakke sammen I dag da?
Nei, de kan ikke det. Du har I hvert fall inn med dyre integrasjonsløsninger.
Mm. Rana, du har lenge lagt vekt på å omtale OXML som ECMAS og ikke Microsoft standard. Noen vil være uenige med deg I det kanskje, men hvorfor skulle open source-miljøet omfavne OXML, synes du?
Men det behøver ikke. Det aldri noen tvang å bruke en standard. Det en høyst frivillig sak. Det som fordelen at det stor utbredelse av standarden, eller altså den nye ISO-standarden. Og selvfølgelig altså avhengig av forretningsmodell, avhengig av kunder, avhengig av hva behov det så det en standard på like linje som ODF, og det helt opp til brukerne å benytte seg av den. Det vi nok kommer til å merke I forhold til vår konsulentvirksomhet, det vil si QuestPoint sin del, og det at for det første så har det blitt en ISO-standard, og kunderne kommer til å etterspørre det som en del av helt sikkert mange andre elementer som de ønsker å integrere seg mot.
Hmm. Håkon Gimli, du har jo stått I spissen for motstanden, kan man si, mot OXML I... du har I hvert fall vært tonangivende. I morgen skal dere til og med holde demonstrasjon.
Det skal vi. Vi skal faktisk på gata. Jeg kan si det med en gang, bare for å få unna det. Det blir demonstrasjon på gata utenfor huset her, 20 meter til høyre. Der har ISO et møte samtidig. Det utrolig sammentreff. Jeg håper mange blir med oss på demonstrasjon klokka 12.
Men ikke på tide, Håkon? Takk. Er det ikke på tide å erkjenne at ISO godkjenner OXML. Vi har noe sånt som 86% flertall eller noe sånt nå. Kommer seg videre derfra.
Altså, det jo litt surrealistisk å sitte her og høre at det blir referert til som en ISO-standard. For dokumentet eksisterer jo ikke enda. Vi vet det blir ca. 8000 sider, som ca. Så høyt når det printes ut. Men det eksisterer jo. Vi har jo ikke noen spesifikasjon enda. Vi erkjenner dog likevel at det kommer til å få et sånt ISO-stempel. Det som vi synes veldig leit I denne sammenhengen her, at ISO-stempelet kommer til å få et lavere verdi ut fra dette. Når vi ser hvordan prosessen rundt dette her, alle de tingene som har skjedd, jeg trenger ikke å ramse opp, men det har skjedd mye som ikke burde skje, og internett og web og alt det her som vi tror på, det bygd på åpne standarder. Og når det kommer da en så grusom greie som det der, så blir jeg veldig trist og lei.
Kort kommentar, Rana.
Ja, jeg må få lov til å komme med en kommentar. For det første så det ikke nødvendigvis det at det ISO som har sagt ja til standarden. Det ISO-landene som har stemt på standarden. Land etter land etter land har gått over fra et nei til et ja. Og så da Håkon inne på at ja, det har skjedd så mye rart. Jeg skulle ønske at Håkon endelig kunne begynt å dokumentere alt det rare ja,
det
som har skjedd.
Ja, ja,
ja, vent litt nå. Jeg må opp og si, vi kan gå og trekke av smilebåndet I forhold til det den ene deltakeren her sa, og sammenligne prosessen I Norge med Mugabe. Det en høyst alvorlig anklage, selv om det kanskje litt grann løye å høre det.
Men,
men som også nødvendigvis ikke dokumentert. Håkon har enda ikke klart å legge solid bevis på at det har funnet sted korrupsjon I standard Norge.
Okay. Jeg vil aldri sammenligne det med Mugabe, til det vet jeg for lite om situasjonen I Zimbabwe.
Ja. Men... tror vi... Vi skal jeg vil gjerne høre med, for eksempel med deg, jeg vil til, hva tror du om ISO-godkjenning? Får det noen effekt I forhold til dere I offentlig sektor?
Ja, det gjenstår jo å se, fordi det jo egentlig FAD og regjeringen som må ta stilling til dette for offentlig sektor. De har allerede godkjent ODF, og jeg regner med at også spørsmålet om godkjenning av OXML kommer opp I standardiseringsrådet I FAD. Og da tror jeg vel også, når det gjelder prosess, så tror jeg at vi får en helt annen prosess enn det vi har sett i Standard Norge, behandlingen der. Så jeg har to tiltro til at vi da får en god prosess og en avgjørelse som man kan være enig om.
Mm. Ja, Microsoft har også hatt, det handler ikke bare om OXML som sagt dette her, selv om det ekstra betent, men det har jo vært en del andre initiativer også som Microsoft har hatt for å frigi kode, også binærkode for eldre programvare blant annet. Det har vært liksom lunkent mot, sagt, for å si det litt forsiktig, har jeg inntrykk av, I open source-miljøet, disse tiltakene. Kan Microsoft være en troverdig open source-partner? Hvem som helst? Svar på det.
Jeg kan starte, jeg. Det tror jeg absolutt Microsoft kan være. Jeg startet å programmere Windows 286 I de tidene det var bare en file manager. Jeg tror Microsoft aldri hadde blitt et så stort selskap, hadde ikke de åpnet opp I forhold til dokumentasjon, I forhold til beskrivelsen på API-kall. Fordi at av og til så høres det ut som at det kun Microsoft som styrer hele programvarebransjen. Det veldig mange aktører der ute, og når du ser på all dokumentasjon som de har tilgjengeliggjort og tilrettelagt for utviklerne, jeg tror mye av suksessen til Microsoft så langt skyldes at de nettopp hadde en helt annen åpen dokumentasjonstankegang når det gjaldt API-kallene sine.
Jeg vil være forsiktig med å sette likhetstegn mellom open source og åpenhet. Microsoft en utviklerplattform. Vårt utgangspunkt å utvikle gode løsninger for våre kunder, og det ingen hemmelighet at vi satser tungt på Microsoft-plattformen I forhold til å utvikle applikasjonene våre. Og det gjør vi fordi det den som gir oss mest og best sluttbrukerfunksjonalitet til kommuner og andre kunder som bruker løsningene våre. Og det ikke open source, men åpenheten mer enn tilstrekkelig for å lage gode applikasjoner.
Men for å spørre på en litt annen måte, har open source-bevegelsen påvirket Microsoft til å oppføre seg annerledes? I forhold til å dele opp kode eller sånt ting for deres?
Det forbaus på om det ikke har. Det en sterk kraft I vår tid.
Ja, det klart, disse tingene diskuteres I alle programvarefirmaer. Jeg sitter jo selv I Opera, hvor vi ikke åpen kildekode, selv om vi bruker mye åpen kilde I form av dekodere, vi leverer vårt produkt på Linux, og så videre. Jeg har jo da sympati med Microsoft der, det ikke bare å slå over I en åpen kildekodemodell. Det funker ikke over natten, men jeg tror dette ting som diskuteres overalt, inkludert på styrerommet til Microsoft.
Ja, hvorfor gjør ikke dere det I Opera?
Nei, vi har ikke klart å finne en modell hvor vi klarer å beholde inntektene våre, som mye kommer fra for eksempel telefonprodusenter, hvor de skal fortsette å betale oss dersom de ikke trenger å gjøre det. Vi har ikke klart det, vi har prøvd. Jeg skulle gjerne hatt en modell tilsvarende Creative Commons, hvor du kan si, her innholdet mitt, bruk det, gjenbruk det så mye du vil, men dersom du skal gjenbruke det kommersielt, da kom og snakk med meg. Den modellen savner jeg.
Men bare for jeg til, det nok ikke mye med Håkon og meg enige, men akkurat på de tingene der vi nok veldig enige. Fordi at det to ulike forretningsmodeller, og jeg tror de to forretningsmodellene klarer mer enn godt nok å leve I sammen, hånd I hånd, i forhold til det å kunne tjene penger ute I markedet på de tingene der.
Har open source-miljøet funnet fram til, som inntrykk fra deres side, fram til fornuftige forretningsmodeller? Det noe av det som open source sliter med?
Nei, altså, jeg tror open source sliter kanskje mer med at det netto setter mer konsumere av open source programvare enn bidragsytere til den. fordi at det er et fåtal idealister som sitter og jobber, og så er det mange, eller det er flere som bruker det de lager enn nødvendigvis det bidrag som kommer tilbake til det. Så jeg tror open source-delen hadde nok hatt mye større behov for enda mer tesig av enda dyktigere programmerere som hadde vært med bidratt til det.
Ja, og det jo klart en utfordring med modellen at den gir, det kan være vanskelig å få et forretningsmessig grunnlag for å investere mye ressurser og lage en, en god fagløsning for en, en gitt kundegruppe.
Jeg vil si at på 10 år har open source-bevegelsen, jeg kaller det open source, klart å snu dataverdenen helt, og vi tenker helt annerledes nå på grunn av det som skjedde på en konferanse for 10 år siden og videre utvikling. Så å begynne å snakke om at det ikke har lykkes, det tror jeg blir helt feil. Jeg tror det vi som sitter med de gamle modellene egentlig som har en utfordring her.
Nei, altså jeg sier ikke at det ikke har lykkes, Håkon. Det sier jeg ikke, men jeg sier det at jeg tror tesige av dyktige programmerere er enda mer behov for i open source-delen. Men altså, Microsoft har jo også tatt en del initiativ i forhold til det å flytte mye av open source fra Linux-miljøene over til .NET-plattformen eller til Microsoft-plattformen for å gjøre det enda mer tilgjengelig.
Ja, jeg tror vi på en måte begynner å komme forbi den fasen da det var noen som satt på gutterommet og gjorde dette her. Nå begynner det å bli mer renhårig, og vi hadde et godt eksempel her tidligere i dag fra Kongsberg, denne Kongsberg-portalen FriComport, hvor altså det et 20-talls kommuner som med nå på å videreutvikle den sammen med en kommersiell aktør. Så det den måten vi skal jobbe på. Vi skal ikke sitte rundt omkring noen tid på fritida og jobbe i kommunene. Vi skal ha med oss profesjonelle leverandører som kan fri programvare og utvikle løsninger og drifte dem. Men det blir en helt annen system enn det vi har hatt tidligere. Og kommunene der selv med på å putte innhold inn i denne løsningen.
Kan jeg få...
Ja.
Og i forhold til det så innovasjon et tema og konkurranse som driver av innovasjon. Og at en konkurranse måler på en måte hele kostnadsbildet. En konkurranse som måler kun lisenspris kan bli en konkurranse på veldig feil grunnlag, og det er noen interessante refleksjoner rundt den type delingsmodeller når man skal inn og konkurrere med en mer tradisjonell modell, om vi får konkurrere på like vilkår.
Ja. Jeg har et spørsmål til deg, Viltil. Det jo mye snakk om konkurransebildet i forbindelse med disse tingene her. Ok, kan gjerne si at, eller argumentere mot at Microsoft har et godt tak på bransjen. Jeg har vel inntrykk av når jeg har snakket med aktører i offentlig sektor i hvert fall, at det balletaket nok så solid. Så hva skal til for at dere stiller friere i forhold til valg av leverandør? La oss si i løpet av et par tre år. Hva må skje da?
Ja, jeg tror som sagt vi må finne fram til gode løsninger basert på fri programvare for å få opp noe konkurranse. Vi ser på enkelte sektorer så det altså monopolleverandør til de grader av leverandører av fagsystemer. Man kommer liksom ikke videre. Man har ikke konkurranse, og det da får man heller ikke innovasjon. Så vi ønsker å få opp flere fri programvare løsninger og få reell konkurranse. Men det klart dette komplisert, fordi det veldig mye binding mot Microsoft i dag. Alle fagsystemene har jo Microsoft i bånd, og det veldig komplisert. Og de kommunene som allerede har prøvd seg på det, for eksempel på kontorprogrammer, og introdusere fri programvare løsninger, Open Office for eksempel, har fått veldig problemer, og det har kostet veldig. Så dette en prosess som vi antagelig må starte å legge en plan for, og kjøre en planmessig utvikling av fri programvare for ulike områder.
Jeg har inntrykk av at dette her går ikke så fort som man skulle tro, kanskje. Eller, altså, det har ikke skjedd så mye, egentlig. Vil det skje fortere de neste årene?
Det jeg ganske sikker på. Det jeg ganske sikker på. Jeg synes bare det den interessen har vært for denne konferansen og for Friprogsenter og alt dette, det viser jo at nå på en måte tiden moden, og tiden inne for å virkelig å gripe fatt i det.
Da var det deg, Soffer.
Ja, konkurranse viktig, det jeg helt enig deg i. Jeg har jobbet og utviklet og solgt systemer til kommunesektoren i 10-15 år. Og det ikke tvil om på kontorstøttesystemer så jo konkurransen begrenset, og det var et godt eksempel på tannlegesystemer du hadde opp i ditt foredrag tidligere, men på en rekke andre, de fleste andre fagsystemsektorer så det en solid konkurranse, og veldig høy konkurranse aktørene imellom. På tross at de kanskje alle baserer seg på Microsoft-plattform, så det en veldig konkurransedrevet innovasjon. Og den tror jeg det viktig å ivareta fremover, og at vi gjennom å utbre delingsmodeller ikke sparker ben for den.
Ja. En replikk fra Håkon, og så tror jeg vi skal åpne for spørsmål fra salen. Så de som har noe vi spør om, posisjonerer dere allerede. Der har vi en. Men vi begynner med Håkon først.
Ja, jeg synes dette her går veldig fort, fordi det som skjer, det store bildet her, at alle disse tjenestene, alle disse programmene går over på webben og blir webtjenester. Det ikke så veldig interessant egentlig, dette kontorstøtte, om du kjører OXML eller ODB. For begge de to egentlig, de kommer til å bli erstattet av HTML til slutt. Vi kommer til å editere dokumentene våre på webben, og om du bruker da Mozilla eller Firefox eller Opera, om du kjører på en mobiltelefon eller ikke, det spiller ingen rolle. Alt tilgjengelig på webben. Så, og når man setter seg inn og utvikler en ny applikasjon I dag, man trenger ikke velge mellom Mac eller Linux og Windows, man skriver det for webben rett og slett.
Ok, da var det spørsmål fra salen. Jeg har dessverre ikke noen sånn mikrofon jeg kan reise rundt med, så dere må snakke ut høyt og tydelig, Steven Reier. Da var det deg først fremme her. Ja, det greit innspill, men har du noen spørsmål til noen av dem?
Jeg har spørsmål. Jeg lurer litt på om noen av dem kan anerkjenne annet enn Håkon, at det faktisk skjer I en formidabel fart, det vi har sett med fri programvare de siste 10 årene. Håkon var så vidt inne på det, men jeg så ikke noen nødvendigvis anerkjenne det faktum. Jeg tror for eksempel fri programvare, eller et enda bedre eksempel, Wikipedia, kanskje den raskeste revolusjonen som har skjedd I menneskets historie på kortest tid. Ja.
Ja, jeg kan se for å høre med deg da, Rana.
Jeg kan starte først, jeg.
Også. Skal du anerkjenne litt mer?
ja, men altså for det første til Geir. Det jeg sier at det netto konsumenter av åpen kildekode, nødvendigvis de som bidragsyter tilbake til de ulike prosjektene. Og jeg tror det et fåtal norske utviklere som bidrar til å ta det felles løftet som det ligger der. Og når det gjelder anerkjennelse av open source-miljøene, vet du ikke, det en fantastisk bevegelse på alle måter, og det knallbra, og jeg har ikke noe som helst problem med å anerkjenne det.
Det vil jeg slutte meg til. Ikke noe problem med å anerkjenne, det imponerende, og det påvirker oss alle. Og klart, vi I tenkeboksen som Håkon snakker om forretningsmodellen. Dette påvirker oss, og vi tenker på det hele tiden.
Det bra sitat,
det noen... Jeg kunne tenke meg å se en sånn håndsopprekning på hvor mange av dere kan tenke dere å jobbe sammen med Microsoft. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 Det ikke så verst
Jeg tror det 10, det ikke så gale det Jeg fornøyd med det oh, ja, okay.
ok det noen flere spørsmål? Martin Bekklund
Ja
Det skjer flere ting der. For det første så har Microsoft også I kontakt med FriProg-senteret. Så det ikke helt riktig det. Det kan du mest høre med Heidi, hvis hun her. Ok. Ja, det greit. Jeg kjenner ikke til det nå. Ja.
Ja. For dere som ikke vet, så har Christer jobbet I Microsoft.
Ja, og han har jobbet I FAD også. Og I forhold til aktivitetene rundt FriProg-senteret, altså for det første så skulle vi ønske at vi ble invitert til denne konferansen her, til varme som bidragsyter. Fordi at jeg tror Microsoft har mye å tilføye I forhold til de nye initiativene som kommer. Men vi skal heller ikke glemme at dette et svært selskap på, jeg vet ikke hvor mange tusen det da, og det tar tid å endre butikken. Men jeg, altså, interessen I Microsoft Norge, den genuin, og Microsoft kommer til å gjøre noe med det. Men da må vi også bli invitert til bordet. Fordi at dessverre så har jeg litt sånn inntrykk av at en har litt sånn piggene ute orker som hva Microsoft gjør for noe, og det blir litt sånn feil fot å starte diskusjon på. Men jeg tror du kommer til å se, Martin, tida fremover, at det kommer til å være flere initiativ fra Microsoft på den fronten der.
Becklund, et spørsmål sikkert.
Vet du hva? Der tror jeg vi må sette oss ned sammen med Fripok-senteret. Fordi at jeg tror vel så mye at jeg har behov for å lære I forhold til de tingene som Fripok-senteret gjør. Jeg kjenner ikke til alle detaljene.
Jeg har forslag til en aktivitet. Dere kunne samarbeide om å legge inn ODF-støtte I Office.
Jeg må bare få til. La meg si på en annen måte. Microsoft-folk får sitere Gisle Hanemyr, som han skrev på bloggen sin. De ikke dumme. Så la oss se hva som kommer opp.
Ok, Rana. Har Microsoft det samme balletaket på denne bransjen om 5 år som I dag?
Samme balletak?
Eller enda bedre balletak? Eller et litt dårligere balletak?
Godt spørsmål. Nei, vet du hva? Det avhenger helt av utviklerne. Jeg tror det veldig mye sånn som sitter på Software Innovation som velger en plattform på grunn av funksjonalitet eller dokumentasjon. Jeg tror spørsmålet mer
på Software Innovation. Samme spørsmål da.
Vi velger plattformen fordi at den god, og det avhenger om den god, men det også markedsdrevet. Vi gjør hva våre kunder driver, og vi konstaterer at...
Selvfølgelig, men jeg ber deg om, du kan ikke mene ditt da, om dette?
Kan jeg få
Nei, det faktisk uinteressant for jeg mener I dag. Det var også en markedssituasjon om 5 år som var interessant for meg.
Kan jeg bare få gjøre til en ting? Jeg tror ting litt det som Håkon nevnte, og som også, du for så vidt også var inne på. Det en forretningsmodell som går på å tjene penger på lisenser. Sånn at, og jeg tror det det som den største utfordringen, det at open source-delen tillater ikke nødvendigvis å ta seg betalt for selve programvaren, men gjerne en distribusjonsmekanisme. Sånn at jeg tror det veldig mye spørsmål om frekk.